Each individual must walk their own path to find their own sacred sources and sacred practices. For me, one of the most important sources of spiritual inspiration is poetry, largely by contemporary poets. Mary Oliver, Denise Levertov, some older ones, E.E. Cummings, Emily Dickinson, and older still, Rumi and Hafiz. And my Bible has become a small anthology called Soul Food. It has a wonderful selection of poets to move and to stimulate the spirit. And from it, this poem by Denise Levertov that I read earlier is in it. She's a British-American poet who lived from 1923 until 1997. As swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them, as hawks rest upon air and air sustains them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace. As swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them. I wonder if you remember learning to swim. Do you remember the first time that you trusted the water to hold you afloat? I remember it very vividly. I was probably about 7 or 8 years old, and I'd loved being in the water from a very young age, but had not yet learned to swim. My mother wasn't a swimmer, and my dad somehow just didn't get around to it. I think when we went to the beach, he sort of went for a swim himself and then flopped. Anyway, my older cousins were over visiting once, and the two families, we went for a day trip to one of our favorite picnic spots. It's a bog lake in Connemara. Apparently it was called Loch an Ilan. We used to call it our lake. Do you know, we would go there and Mum would build a fire and cook sausages, and maybe in the whole day two cars might pass by. I went there again recently. They said, you say you shouldn't go back to your favorite old places. It was exactly as I remembered it. But there were more cars passing by, and I think there was there'd been new houses built a little bit further on, and there were commuters going in and out from Galway, but it was lovely to be there. The water was the colour of tea because of the peat, but it was fresh and beautiful nonetheless. And my older cousin started swimming out to the lake in the middle, while I waded in and looked longingly after them. My aunt could see that I wanted to be able to do the same, and that afternoon she worked with me, supporting me as I took my feet off the bottom and lay on my back with her arms around me, trusting her to hold me aloft, and finally trusting her to take her arms away and allow the water to support me. And I remember that first feeling of freedom, floating in that little bog lake in Connemara, looking up at the sky and feeling so much more at one with the water and the sky than I ever could wading along the bottom with my feet stumbling along the stones there. And to this day, lying on my back in open water, looking up at the sky, gives me one of the greatest feelings of exhilaration. And it all started with trusting my aunt to hold me, and then trusting the water to hold me. It can be difficult to trust, but it seems that the more one trusts, in people, maybe in God, in the universe, the more one's capacity to trust grows. Ernest Hemingway wrote this: "The best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. The best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. At some stage, it's necessary to jump in with both feet and put one's trust in a person, in a community, in life itself. And so as swimmers dare to lie face to the sky and water bears them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace. So what does it mean to trust in the all-surrounding grace of Creator Spirit? Do you remember the gospel story about Jesus walking on the water in the storm? Peter sees Jesus coming across the water, and in a great act of faith and trust, he sets out on the water to meet Jesus. His trust is rewarded, and he finds himself walking on the surface of the lake towards Jesus. But the wind blows wilder, and he loses trust, and he begins to sink. Jesus reaches out and takes his hand and guides him back to the boat. This story is, I think, a great metaphor for the power of trust and also of the powerful effect of losing trust. But trusting in God or in the universe or in the capacities of the human being, it's not about being able to walk on water. It's not about trusting in some kind of Santa Claus of a God to hand out rewards to those who pray hard enough. Putting one's trust in God or the universe is akin to putting one's trust in one's own place in the universe. We can seem so incredibly insignificant the more we learn about the vastness of the universe. But trusting that divine spirit, which I truly believe there's a spirit of whatever God is, there is a spirit of that transcendence within each one of us. Trusting it to uphold and strengthen us, to meet the chances and changes of a life deeply lived. The more we trust in life, the more we're able to open our eyes to the opportunities of grace which pass around us all the time. The more we're able to claim our place at one with the universe and an essential part of it. Each one of us is an essential part of the universe. Trusting that God is in us, as Hermann Hesse believed the trees trusted, that God is in them. Trusting that our labor is holy and realizing that home is within each one of us. These are the ways in which we can achieve the equanimity we need to live fully and deeply. When trust is broken, it can seem for a while impossible to think of trusting again, but what is living without trust? It's a poor shadow of what life can be. So we already heard what Hermann Hesse thought about trees and trust. The children's author, Lemony Snicket, also had something to say about this. Deciding whether or not to trust a person is like deciding whether or not to climb a tree. Because you might get a wonderful view from the highest branch, or you might simply get covered in sap. And for this reason, many people choose to spend their time alone and indoors, where it's harder to get a splinter. So let us not live our lives indoors, avoiding splinters, but let us look to the wisdom of trees and embrace and trust in life and the universe. The more you trust, the more the world opens up to us. Trusting in the universe can allow us to live with an inner sense of the ultimate worthwhileness of it all. And sometimes losing that trust in the ultimate worthwhileness can happen, and it's a horrible place to be. Even during circumstances when our inner weather seems to be telling us that we can't trust, somehow finding that trust can help us through. But how do we go about finding this trust? It's all about making a decision. Deciding that we're going to live our lives based on a sense of trust, whether that is in God, in the universe, in the ultimate rightness of our place in the universe. The best way you can find out if you can trust somebody or something is to trust them. And in retrospect, I realize that it was that decision to trust that led me to where I am today, ministering to beloved communities of Unitarians, encouraging us all to minister to each other. In the 1990s and early 2000s, during some dark days of depression, which has been a continual sickness that I have struggled with, but which I have learned more and more about how to live with, during those times when feelings of futility were never far away, I continued to attend this church and was ministered to by Bill Darlison and the beloved community here. And this ultimately taught me to trust in God, in my place in the universe. And that's why I felt called to ministry. I felt the call to share that possibility of learning to trust, of deciding to trust within beloved spiritual community. You might very reasonably ask, what about when something really terrible happens? When a person's world completely falls apart, how can trust continue? The trust I'm talking about isn't a trust that life will be easy and happy all the time, but a trust in the ultimate worthwhileness of it. For a short term, I had the great pleasure of working alongside the Reverend Dr. Bill Shulls, an American Unitarian Universalist minister. He had for many years been director of Amnesty International USA. And I remember a story that he told about visiting a refugee camp in Somalia. He was being shown around the facilities of this place, crowded with thousands of people who had fled their homes and who had lost everything. He was introduced to one of the Somalian women there who had lost everything. He said to us, "It's difficult to know what to say to a person in this kind of situation." So he noticed that she was wearing a bright blue stone around her neck, and he asked her about it. And she replied, "This is me." And he checked with his translator, and she was not saying, "This is mine." She was saying, "This is me." And Bill interpreted this as meaning that that through all of the horror and death deprivation that this woman had lived, she held on to the fact that ultimately she was a thing of beauty and a person who had a place in the universe, despite all the horrors. And so each one of us has a place in the universe, even though there are times when it may seem hard to believe. And it is this kind of trust, I think, that Denise Levertov is talking about in her poem. Despite all things that may indicate the contrary, we can learn to float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace. Just as swimmers dare to lie face to the sky, and water bears them. Amen.